Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Gary Levitan. Gary is the global head of procurement, sourcing, and supply chain at WeWork, a flexible workspace company that went public in October. He has over 15 years' experience in procurement, and during that time, he has worked to ensure that various stakeholder groups within the business are able to either meet or exceed their objectives through contracts and supplier relationships. So, Gary, thank you so much for joining here on the Sourcing Hero today.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's great to be here.
Now, I shared where you are now and at a very high level what you do today, but can you share a little bit more detail about your background and professional experience?
Sure. So much like many of my peers, much like most of the procurement industry, it seems in general, I got my start in a almost virtually unrelated industry. I graduated college not really knowing what to do with my life. This was before really the internet. This was before LinkedIn that could help guide you. So I got into finance. I was good with numbers. I became a credit manager very early on. That led me to the energy industry, where I was a credit portfolio manager for an energy company. And I started learning about deregulated energy and how companies are procuring their utilities from various sources in order to bring value and increase profitability, especially multi-site operators. I also learned about sustainability, corporate social responsibility, and really what's happening with carbon and how carbon is being injected into the atmosphere. Decided that I would prefer to be on the other side of the business away from energy. As a lifelong New Yorker, that was going to be pretty difficult. I had an energy background, wasn't sure what I was going to do. So I actually leveraged that into my first procurement job, just being an energy and utility procurement specialist for a real estate company. And this was really early on, deregulated energy, although it was about 10 years old at that point, still wasn't commonly leveraged like it is now. So over the next 15 years, I expanded from energy into facilities and construction because utilities affect those cost centers very much. That grew to general real estate, corporate services, and then just grew progressively. I eventually ended up at the Hudson's Bay Company, which is a luxury retailer that owns Saks Fifth Avenue, Lord & Taylor, and the Bay in Canada. And then it got even bigger to JPMorgan Chase, one of the largest banks in the world, thousands of properties, massive spend, a lot of third-party oversight and highly regulated purchasing strategies. And then I took a little break. Again, my role kind of got bigger and bigger. I decided to spend a couple of years giving the tech startup world a shot. It seems like you have to have it on your resume at this point. It's what all the kids are doing these days. And I immediately just felt the pull just back to procurement, back to supply chain. When COVID hit, I you could kind of see the writing on the wall that maintaining a supply chain was going to become a lot more interesting, let's say. And that's really what brought me back to WeWork, where, they were going through a substantial transformation period where they really needed to rebuild their sourcing, procurement, and supply chain organization. And that was just the perfect opportunity at that point in my career. And here I am.
Now, we're going to get back into your procurement-focused time at WeWork in just a second. But as I mentioned in your intro, the company just IPO'd. And I think I've certainly never experienced an IPO as being the head of procurement. And I would imagine a lot of people listening in are in the same boat as me, but are curious. So what was it like, either just generally going through the IPO as a member of the leadership team, or anything that was unique to you being the chief procurement officer?
It was quite interesting. As soon as I, even before I arrived at WeWork, I enjoyed the product. I really liked the product. And as soon as I got there, you could just tell that with the way that corporate America was the direction that we were headed into, we were really like the right company at the right time to capitalize on flexibility and working from home and, a liquid workforce. And the pandemic really accelerated the value proposition there. So the excitement was kind of building. And because of what happened in 2019, we went to IPO, we had to pull it back, lots of transformation. It was almost like, a massive peak, then a huge valley. And then it was this gradual build of excitement and anticipation for what was going to happen next. For me, I was less, I came to WeWork less about the IPO and more about the opportunity to like really create an organization in my vision. And because our CEO talks about profitability is very important to us. There's really a lot of focus on bringing value to the business, on just like really making every operation supported by rigor, and really, lay the bones to a fully functioning public company. Really, that's a long-winded way of saying I was so focused in that first year, at least for the first 6-7 months, sometime around the middle of the summer, I was just really focused on preparing a lot of these functions to start reporting publicly, to like really start being profitable. And then kind of out of nowhere, next thing I know, everything got accelerated. Everybody got really excited. And everybody, obviously the question to me for my entire global organization is what's going to happen after? What's going to happen after? What's going to happen after the IPO? What's going to change? And my response has always been, there are going to be more eyes on everything that we do. And sourcing and procurement are going to be more important than ever. I really feel like we're the backbone. We partner with a lot of other functions as a control function within the organization. And really, if profitability is the key, a lot of people are going to want to talk to us and like really understand, meaning a lot of people, meaning category owners and cost center owners. They're going to want help with ensuring that all their goals now as a public company are met. So it was just really this anticipation of what's going to happen after and how much more important is procurement going to be, and how are we going to fix the supply chain? But that's separate rabbit hole. There was just really a lot of anticipation of day two, not as much the IPO, but really what were we going to turn into?
Well, and to that point, you mentioned when we had spoken before that you basically took this as an opportunity, just as you were trying to help prepare everybody to be public, you're also trying to build the procurement organization that would fuel the growth and the profitability that would really start on that day two. Did you take what you would consider a traditional approach to building out the structure and the team of procurement, or do you think that you maybe took some of the opportunities either based on timing or based on the kind of service you offer to do something a little bit more unique and less traditional, more towards that future success positioning?
Definitely much more unique than traditional procurement organizations. I've spent a lot of time transforming other procurement organizations and also I spent a lot of time seeing very, very traditional and mature organizations operate in a very similar way. Meaning, you try to get a category management process in place where you have as deep as you can have a category expertise and really engage in a business from a partnership, but an expertise partnership relationship. I knew that was going to be difficult, number one, to start from scratch, especially in a pretty young company with a lot of young, ambitious, quick-moving entrepreneurs like we have here. I'm also, I don't necessarily think that it's an effective way, or not an effective, I don't think that it's a precise way to support a procurement function, meaning, you know, the traditional way is you find the category experts and then you staff based on spend under management. So the more spend you have under management within each category, the more professionals you hire, or the more professionals you have a need for. And the complexity of the category determines the level of professionals or the level of expertise. I've experienced too many things in my career that doesn't really make that a reality. Like, for example, anybody who knows me has heard this kind of anecdotal joke multiple times. I managed a multi-billion dollar category by myself. And it was something that I was so proud of, and easily could have had a large global organization to help and justified. But we were talking about 2, 3, maybe 4 annual transactions. So there was really enough human work, you know, enough actual hours for one person. So that's really how I tried to focus on building out the organization. I'm really trying to use data. We have a lot of data. We have a lot of different systems and data sources. I'm really trying to use data to give me insight into how much actual work and what type of work is there for each function within my vision of an organization. And that's really what I'm focusing on.
And it sounds to me, and actually this is interesting, because I don't think I realized until a few minutes ago that you actually came into procurement really through your category expertise, right? I know that that's a common pathway into procurement, but I think it represents a smaller percentage of folks. More people are just sort of procurement generalists, and maybe over time they do or don't get assigned to a category. But given that you came in with that energy-based category expertise, do you think that that positioned you to enjoy your work in procurement because it allowed you to connect the expertise that you had built up over time with what it could ultimately deliver for the business? I actually wonder if that gave you more enjoyment of your work because you were able to see how what you knew could hit the business in some beneficial way.
That's an interesting question, and I'm reflecting on it right now. So you're really getting, you know, a stream of consciousness assessment of that. I actually think being that kind of category expert, especially coming from that side of the industry, probably at times made me enjoy it even less. Kind of miss the value of a really state-of-the-art sourcing category management process. And what I mean by that is you're always going to, much of what we do is going to always involve stakeholder management. And oftentimes they're the experts, the vast majority of the time. And even if they're not the experts, quite frankly, they're the ones signing the checks. They're the ones making the final decision. They're the ones who have the P&L responsibility. So if you are the expert in that relationship, it makes it more, it's just human nature to make it more difficult to collaborate and like really apply best sourcing practices to the situation, because you kind of, you know what the answer is, or you know what the optimal answer is, but it makes it a little bit more difficult to communicate that to your stakeholders, who's the final decision maker. So that's something that I'm actually trying to stay away from. And that's something that after moving away out of my comfort zone and starting to do category strategies for categories that I had little to no experience with, when I started learning like the value of an actual end-to-end source to pay process and how, you know, the diverse the talent pool could be for that, because now you don't need a specific acumen to do that or a specific experience. It's all in the process, and there really is so much value to the business, especially to a stakeholder who either is an expert, sees themselves as an expert, or has all the pressures of owning a P&L upon their shoulders. So it was actually, you know, being an expert, it gave me a lot of pride, but I think it took me a little bit longer to understand general best practices.
Well, I think it's sort of like a pendulum swing. It's a hard thing to to sort of get the balance on? Because on the one hand, I completely understand, you know, it's the business wants to be the expert. And so if in reality you have the same amount, if not more expertise in a given category than your business stakeholder, it can create an uncomfortable dynamic, which I completely understand. But to go too far the other way and to just say, oh, well, then procurement should be process experts and let the business have the expertise, then there's some loss of authority with the business. I think this is a continuum that a lot of CPOs and procurement teams are really struggling. And it's certainly not to say that the right place on that continuum is going to be the same for every category. You know, you might end up having some type of expertise in the business that's amazing and collaborative and it's a good relationship, but then have another case where, yes, expertise exists within the business, but based on the dynamic, procurement needs to go in a little bit better informed in this particular case in order to achieve the objectives from the spend and the contracts and the suppliers. So I think this back and forth is tough. And it's interesting how you shine some light on it from the perspective of coming in with that expertise. And then how do you transition over to sort of the process side of things? How do you work out that relationship with the business? I think it's a much more creative process and a creative balance than many people realize.
Absolutely right. I mean, that you're so the process and the category strategy and the end-to-end procurement process, that's the science. And it's strategic, but it's also very quantifiable and it's very black and white. But what the latter part of what you're talking about is the art. And that is, to me, what's the most fascinating part of it. It is the most challenging part, but figuring that balance, especially at an organizational level, like I am now, it keeps it from being too rote. You know, like if you apply too many, if you have the greatest procurement and sourcing methodology on the planet, and you just apply it to every single category, and you have great success, it's only a matter of time before that gets completely rote, and you'll never be able to retain like really the top talent. So that science of, you know, the human aspect and how to figure that out and how to place yourself within an organization, you know, not being not too much of a control function, but also not being too much of just a as needed partner. That's really what's fun for me, quite frankly.
Well, and I mean, to your point about things becoming rote, there's not a better example in the world than strategic sourcing, right? It was very strategic at first. And so we codified it, or everybody had their different process flow or their framework that they would use. And it was almost like the more consistent we made it, the less thought actually went into the process, because we all started going, okay, step one is call my stakeholder. Okay, I did that yesterday. Step two, and it's like, no. There needs to be, like you said, more art. Still a whole lot of science, because with access to data and all of these different options we have, the science has to be present. That's what procurement brings to the table. But this whole artistic figuring out the lay of the land and the personalities and the supplier partnerships and the market leverage, that's really where we have to say, okay, whether it's strategic sourcing or whether it's category management, I get the general idea. I get the driving principles behind this process, but I'm not going to follow it like a to-do list, right?
Yeah. You know, an increase in efficiency has almost a one-to-one relationship to an increase in complacence, unfortunately, but you also need it. You know, that's how you scale a business. That's how you scale an organization, but absolutely right. And that it also, if it becomes too process oriented, it becomes too tactical, the perceived value to, you know, whether it's your shareholders, your executive team, the perceived value goes down as well. So yeah, you have to really find that balance. To me, that's the ultimate holy grail of a procurement organization.
Now, if we think about hitting that right balance of art and science, we might be working towards something that we could call creative category management. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, what would a solid balance along that art-science continuum look like for category management. How would you actually describe that to somebody that was maybe newer to the practice of category management?
That's a really interesting question. Once again, I'm going to give you a creative answer because there is no formula for that. Otherwise, this wouldn't be as challenging as we're making it sound.
That's true. I didn't get you with that trick.
Yeah, there's no formula. And if I had the formula, I'd publish it and sell it and patent it. And, you know, this conversation would probably be even more different. It's really, first of all, it's organization based. And every organization is different, not only from the humans that are leading it, but just from the way you deliver to your customers, the way you gain profitability, the way that you expand your market reach or your market share. So, and you have to take that into account. So you have to assess the organization, you assess your stakeholders, and you search for that balance, right? Like right away, for example, at WeWork, we have a lot of cost centers that have experts, that have legitimate industry experts and a robust team and existing process to do a lot of the tactical work that we would normally take on. So you apply an approach to that that's different from some of the newer organizations that have less experience, that have a much less process, that will allow you to deviate from just your own process and be more of that expert. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is you can't approach every year the same way. You can't approach every organization the same way. Like you really have to adjust that balance to your internal customers. That's really the key. And you have to keep adjusting because companies change.
Absolutely. And we've certainly been through a time of change. You specifically at WeWork going through the IPO, the rest of the world, right? Supply chains continuing to be disrupted and all of the, I mean, like you said, right moment, right solution. Everybody is sent home, but there's kids trying to learn on iPads and there's multiple spouses in the house. You know, talk about the ideal situation for making flexible workspace available, right?
Yeah.
Now, as we start to wind down our conversation, one of the questions that I ask everybody that joins me on the podcast, and I think it's a tough question, but the range of responses that I've gotten to this over time has absolutely amazed me. So I want to ask you, Gary, what does the idea either of a sourcing hero, you know, specifically within sourcing, procurement, category management, or simply heroism in the context of a business setting, what does that mean to you?
I think that the definition, I'm going to stick to sourcing hero, I'm going to just respond generally as a hero within an organization. It's that flexibility that we just talked about. It's, you know, finding the critical aspects of either a product delivery, revenue generation, of really your core business, finding where you fit in the things that need help most, and helping them. I mean, it's really the most perfectly run organization on the planet has either internal issues that they still need to iron out or external things that they didn't account for, like the current supply chain disruption, let's call it. And being a hero internally is finding where you can help most and just really fixing that, getting ahead of it, creating process for it, just really bringing value where it's needed most. And where you can impact the most. I know that sounds like kind of a cliche, but I think a lot of leaders and a lot of executives gravitate towards, you know, the either high dollar or what is perceived to be the biggest problems or the biggest opportunities. But that's not necessarily that something that works with their organization the most. So the overall effectiveness is hindered. So I think being a true hero internally, at the risk of being melodramatic, is matching that highest impact with a rational assessment of how well you could actually impact that, and combining the two and really maximizing the value that you bring to the organization by doing that.
Well, and I think that speaks to your point earlier about constantly reassessing and adjusting the plan, right? Because what is most important today or your greatest opportunity for impact today might almost mean nothing next month. And then, you know, now it's a completely different landscape and you have to set different priorities or try different approaches. And so constantly being open to what has changed, how has it changed, what does that mean I can bring to the table under the new circumstances? I mean, you could almost direct an entire wavelength of your brain just to monitoring change within an organization. And so I agree with you. I will say I don't think it's melodramatic at all. I think that's actually a strength in a leader. And I absolutely think it qualifies for heroism status.
So, thank you so much.
Gary, thank you for being here with me today. Thank you for sharing the behind-the-scenes look at an IPO. Thank you for sharing your point of view and certainly how you came into procurement, as well as now how you approach that work. If people that are listening and want to reach out and connect with you or learn more or just follow you and what you're up to, what is the best way for them to get in touch or reach out?
Definitely LinkedIn. I'm pretty active. I post a lot. I share a lot. I network a lot. You know, coming up in the business world, I didn't have a lot of guidance. I come from a family of immigrants, so I had to find my own way. And I always knew that when I got to a certain point in my career, it would be my absolute duty to give that back. And I love networking. I love sharing best practices. I love learning from others of all experiences. So please don't be shy. I will always make time to share.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero Podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for The Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.